The show where zoologists get fighty. This week we have our resident bat lady and wildlife agony aunt Hannah Van Hesteren. Hannah, who are you championing today?
Today it's the II.
The II, oh my goodness. II captain. Next up we've got Sarah Leach. She's not a leech, she's a human. She's our California sunshine and recent science show off performer. Sarah, what have you got for us today?
So I am representing the amazing but highly endangered San Francisco garter snake.
Whoa. Very American. I like it. And finally, we've got newcomer Poppy Morgan, editor-in-chief of iScience and an anthropology enthusiast. Poppy, who are you backing today?
I've gone for the mysterious Greenland shark.
The Greenland shark?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Okay, and I'm Emma Parkin. All right, let's just have a run through of the rules. For those of you who don't know, there are three rounds. In each round, the creatures will have to face a scenario and try to survive it. Contestants, if you feel your creature is not up to the task, you can turn over your wild card. Ooh. But you can only do this once in the competition. At the end of each round, your creature will be judged. And this time, since Catherine is not here, I am the judge. The judge's rule is final. Contestants, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, on with the first scenario. Scenario number one. Oh no! 101 Dalmatians have been mysteriously dognapped from all over London. Scotland Yard has requested your help to solve the murderous, mysterious crime. How will you aid the detectives in finding the missing puppies? I've thrown you in at the deep end here. Do we have anybody who'd perhaps like to go first?
So I'll go. For those who don't know Aayas, they're these little creepy primate-type animals that live in the trees and come out at night. What's particularly distinctive about them are their enormous bulgy eyes, which already makes them look a little bit creepy, but they are also quite sweet. But also they have this very long middle finger. So that has quite an important use for when they're foraging. Aayas eat mostly sort of insects and bugs and larvae and things like that that live inside the trees. So what they'll do is climb a tree, use their long middle finger, tap it 8 times per second at that kind of rate, and then listen for the echolocation to come back so that they can locate where the bugs are in the tree. So I think this is a transferable skill. He would put it on his CV, and maybe he can go around sort of like tapping the insides of, you know, bad people's houses and listen for puppies inside.
Okay.
I think that's what he'd do.
How big is the II, might I ask?
Well, he's the largest nocturnal primate, but he's quite small.
So stealthy enough that he could potentially kind of break into people's houses, tap on chests. I mean, I imagine puppies are fairly noisy, but just in case they've been silenced somehow.
Just in case.
That might be useful. Does anybody have a retort to Hannah in any way? That we think there might be an issue with Hannah's tapping plan?
Well, puppies aren't larvae, so that's number one.
No, but it's about the echolocation. So if you can tap and listen to larvae where they are, I'm sure you can tap a house and listen to where the puppies are inside. That's a skill that I'd like anyway.
Also, if he gets caught, he can really tell people to fuck off with that long middle finger, quite frankly.
That's
very stern.
Fairly impressive.
I do question them being the largest nocturnal primate, because I feel like I'm a nocturnal primate a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah. you
apart from Sarah Leach, the II is the largest nocturnal primate.
So amend that bit on the Wikipedia page.
Cheers. Thanks.
Thanks, Hannah. You get right on that. Sarah, what are you going to do? How are you going to find the puppies for Scotland Yard?
Well, San Francisco garter snakes, and actually all garter snakes, have really great senses of smell. In fact, a lot of their social interaction in finding other members of their species is based entirely upon pheromones. So I think that they could definitely track down the smell of the puppies, which is a lot less subtle than a snake's pheromones are a lot of the time. They also join together in large groups, and so I think that could be quite helpful in taking down any sort of nasty Cruella de Vil types that kidnapped them. And last, they have excellent venomous saliva that they can use that is not fatal, which is quite important if you're trying to catch a criminal, but it's very, very irritating and causes big rashes on humans and does kill small things that they eat. And that, I think, is the perfect level of sort of subduing force that you would want in this kind of case.
I'm pretty impressed. So you're going to be like Cruella de Vil, you could have had spots all along by me biting you, and you wouldn't have ever needed the puppies in the first
See?
Place.
And isn't red a cooler colour than black and white?
That's a fairly valid argument. How big are these garter snakes? And do they kind of, you say they group together, do they bundle together or do they just slither alongside each other or?
So they are mostly not all that big. Most garter snakes are about 3 feet long when they're adults, although they can get quite a bit bigger than that under the right circumstances. And they join together mostly in big groups to hibernate, or bruminate is the technical correct term, in the winter and for mating, although you do sometimes see them in groups besides that. And when they're together in those groups, they're really just a big ball of snakes.
So you could kind of Indiana Jones it slightly as well, rolling this ball of snakes down a corridor towards a villain.
Yeah.
I can see that.
That's a terrifying thought.
I would be very afraid if I was Cruella de Vil and I'd stolen 101 Dalmatians and there was a big ball of snakes rolling towards me. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty impressive. I'm not sure how Scotland Yard would potentially feel about the situation, but I mean, any means necessary for puppies, mm-hmm. right? So
they partner with sketchier creatures.
Poppy, lovely Poppy, what are you going to do?
So the Greenland shark, I think, is the perfect detective. I'm thinking he is a Scotland Yard, maybe a bit of whiskey on the side. He's probably pouring it into his coffee quite sneakily. We don't know much about their hunting habits, so he's perfect. We're trying to study them and we can't figure them out. So how on earth is a criminal going to figure out that he's stalking them? On top of to counter the snakes, he's also got the fantastic sense of smell, this Greenland shark detective. And so, like most sharks, sense of smell is pretty fantastic. And this one is even more helpful because it's a subarctic shark. So it can even go in the cold waters where no one else can go. So he's got quite a broad migration route that will be able, even if they go really deep, if these criminals have got these puppies in submarines, the shark's going to find them. And on top of that, just to kind of complete the searching detective look, they have eye parasites that eat out their own eyes, but they themselves are bioluminescent. So they're just kind of like little searchlights. So it is a lovely little image of this underwater submarine just kind of going around, and he'll be able to find those puppies for you in the criminal's underwater lair, obviously, if Ursula's taken them as opposed to Cruella de Vil.
Wait, so how... Okay, so are these parasites, are they born with these parasites? Why haven't they got rid of them? Like, surely they're painful. I would not like my eyes to be eaten out.
So they start off on their tail, and the parasites, and lots of sharks have these over their body parasites. It just so happens that the Greenland shark is literally the longest lived vertebrate, like over 200 years old, and we haven't even confirmed yet. The error margins mean they could get to like 550 years old as well. So that just means that the parasites have time to crawl up, where normally on other sharks they just kind of stick to the tail and maybe get a bit further. But the Greenland shark is so long lived, they have time to get there, and then they just kind of settle in the eyes. And it's a bit of a symbiotic relationship because obviously they bioluminesce and then prey will come to the shark's eyes. And so it's a good deal. They're quite chill with it. And
I feel like
puppies.
This is a bit like when you meet somebody and at first you absolutely hate their guts, and then by the end you're in a really passionate, loving relationship.
Yeah.
This is the equivalent in the animal kingdom, right? Like, you know.
Exactly. It's like, oh, can you leave me alone? Oh, wait. Oh, you may have eaten
You can live
my
in
eyes,
my eyes.
But I am getting a lot more food now, so it's a cool deal.
Wow. I'm quite impressed. My only problem I can foresee is that they might have to use the London sewers to actually get around if the puppies are on land in any way.
No, I guess that's true, but I think they'll be up for that. They seem... I mean, they themselves are toxic, so they probably wouldn't care about being in the sewers.
Well, the fresh water might be an issue.
Yeah, but it's lived long enough. It's probably learnt how to invent a salt transporting device, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm also imagining a shark with like a top hat and a monocle and like a flask of whiskey and a cane. And I love that I love that picture.
It would need the cane because it's blind. It has no eyes. So.
And who knows, maybe it's 500 years old.
Exactly.
If it's blind but it has searchlights, what's the point then? Like, if it can't see what it's looking at with the searchlights.
Well, technically it's more than one creature because it's got its bacteria. It's a symbiotic relationship. They're helping each other out.
Okay. Okay, I can see this. I guess I have to choose a winner of that first scenario. I guess I'm pretty impressed by all of them. I love the image of Indiana garter snakes kind of attacking Cruella de Vil, but then I also love the searchlights of the of the shark, so I think I'm going to have to go with the shark in this particular scenario. On to scenario two. Scenario two. Angry aliens have landed on planet Earth and incarcerated all of the humans. How will your species communicate with them to negotiate the safety of the rest of the planet? So I guess this is kind of a foreign communication question. Let's just assume that any communication methods will be fairly useful. I mean, the humans clearly tried and it hasn't worked out, so why not let another species have a go?
I'm going to go straight into my wild card because these creatures are quite solitary. We know nothing, really, other than the fact that the females have live young. So that's about as social as they get from the sound of it.
Okay, so go for it, Poppy.
I'll go for it. Kakapo.
Kakapo. Do we know what a kakapo is?
Is that mm-hmm. big bird?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the one that mated on Stephen Fry's head or on his cameraman's head?
I think they might have done. The kakapo...
The really rare parrot.
Yes, the flightless parrot.
Okay.
So, fairly colourful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very communicative because parrots are very social. So...
What are they going to do?
Well, first of all, the kakapo is at an advantage where it will probably be able to... It's already happy communicating socially. I like to think it would probably with its sheer cuteness, because it does a little dance when it's mating. I feel like it might be able to win over the hearts and souls of the aliens, as well as being able to start that communication with the humans and at least get the plans spread from little groups, depending on where all the prison cells are. And they're flightless, so they're not great on that, but I think the claws will help perhaps pick a lock, maybe. Yeah. I feel like.
I mean, at this point, the aliens have already come down to Earth and imprisoned all the humans, so you're kind of mostly conversing with the aliens in themselves.
Okay, oh, I'm not helping the humans escape.
No, we've given up on them.
Okay, in that case, Kakapo is like, I'm going to do my dance, I'm going to entertain you, and we'll get a new symbiotic relationship going where can you give me cool treats and stop me going extinct, please, because we haven't done a very good job. So the Kakapo's probably all hail the new alien overlords. They might not let me go extinct by taking my habitat, so...
Cool. So so Sarah, how are you gonna save the rest of the planet and void all the humans by communicating with the aliens?
Okay, well, I am using my wild card as well. And it's either house spider or mouse spider.
I think it's supposed to be house spider. Okay. My writing might just be slightly scrawly.
Well, I think spiders have a proven ability to communicate with other species. I've read Charlotte's Web, and I have seen that they have incredible abilities to communicate, and actually in lots of different ways, that spiders are very communicative creatures, even though we don't think of them as being that. So besides weaving webs with messages, or images, if you're talking to aliens, you probably want to be thinking in more of a pictographic way. They also can use sound to communicate with other spiders and with other animals. So she could use tapping to communicate if they seem to be aliens that are more sort of sonically inclined than visually. They can use pheromones, which a lot of spiders coat their webs in. So if these are pheromone-based aliens, I think they've got some great communication strategies there. And last, a bit like the kakapo, they've got a lot of physical ability to communicate. A lot of spiders dance to communicate with other spiders. And so I think that because they have this diversity of communication strategies, at least one of them is going to work on these aliens. And since a lot of that dancing and tapping and other communication is basically male spiders telling female spiders not to kill them, I think that that lends really well to talking to invading aliens that have already taken over the planet.
Angry invading aliens.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think
don't kill me.
The message of don't kill me, don't kill me, don't kill me with effective drumming would be quite a lovely spectacle for everybody, really. But yes, Hannah, what are you going to do? How are you going to communicate with the angry aliens?
Well, that's a good question. Aye-aye is also known to be fairly solitary and that they just kind of leave the odd occasional scent marking around to say, yo, this is my territory, don't come in. And that's pretty much it. So I could either leave funky scents around for the aliens to sort of be like, okay, you know, you've colonised this part of the Earth, maybe I'll take, you know, Australia or something.
Like a little sensory scavenger hunt almost.
Yeah, and just make it smell really foul on the perimeter. You know, a smell that I'll like, but a smell that they probably won't like. I don't know.
If in doubt, colonise Australia.
Yeah,
so.
Well, exactly. I don't know how two-way this communication is, but I think that's probably what I would end up doing.
They've got a good base anyway, aren't they? Only found on Madagascar.
Well, let's not move to Australia then. We'll stay on Madagascar. That's probably the wisest thing to do.
It's probably not high on the list of places the planet you need to take in order to take it over.
So they're very strategic.
Yeah, well done, Ions.
So your solution is just to create a fortress to guard Madagascar, and that you'll create a thing where you're like, the aliens can take over the rest of the Earth,
exactly.
But we're sent marking Madagascar,
yeah,
and
just,
that's
just
it.
Just the perimeter of Madagascar, mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's they're all fairly interesting. I mean, I didn't give you much of a description as to what the aliens were like, so I think you've all done very well. I think we're actually going to go with the spiders on this one, because I think the message of don't kill me, don't kill me, don't kill me is probably the most effective mechanism of negotiation in this scenario. So congratulations to Sarah.
Yay.
Woo. Okay, we're going to go on to our final scenario now. The Kardashian family are looking for a new animal mascot to improve their publicity with those hippie environmentalists. Why should you be the next honorary member of the Kardashian family?
I got this.
Okay, you go for it. You go for it, Sarah.
So first off, because they're from California, I feel like there's some initial familiarity, even if the NorCal-SoCal rivalry is a thing to overcome. And I think that there are two ways that they would get along quite well with the Kardashian family and their initiative. The first one is that San Francisco garter snakes are beautiful. They are this incredible snake that is red and turquoise striped with some black and white things along it. In fact, one of the reasons they are a highly endangered species is that they were so beautiful that lots and lots of them were caught for the pet trade. There's actually more San Francisco garter snakes in Europe than there are in the wild.
Oh, that's really sad.
I know. It's a really harsh thing. And that leads into why they would be perfect for this initiative, because San Francisco garter snakes are actually one of the most endangered snakes in the entire world. There are maybe 1,000 to 2,000 of them left, and they live in a few very small places in, if you know the Bay Area, near Half Moon Bay. They're kind of between San Francisco and San Jose. And these snakes are a great story of so many reasons that animals are endangered. They were caught for the pet trade. They also had their habitat devastated and their prey devastated. Their most common prey item historically was a frog that's also endangered. So they've been made endangered by amphibian death, which is a whole own thing. They've been endangered by habitat loss and development, especially the loss of wetlands because they're largely aquatic snakes, and humans and other effects that we have on the environment. So I think there's a lot of directions you could go starting with them.
Wow. So in terms of impressing the Kardashians to adopt you as their mascot, you're going for patriotism, aesthetically pleasing, and rarity.
And that they're a symbol of lots of different environmental issues that are affecting animals and plants around the world. So I think a San Francisco garter snake could be a good mascot for a lot of different issues they might want to discuss with this new environmental initiative.
Who's next? Who thinks they can impress the Kardashian family to become the next member and mascot?
Well, Kardashians are known for their distinctive body parts. Let's go with...
for example?
Kim K's famous booty.
Yep.
And all of the sisters now famous by association booties.
And at the moment, Kylie Jenner's like belly, because nobody's ever seen a picture of it and she's pregnant. So
all belly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You know, they've got these lovely big full lips that they have. You know, it's this key Kardashian thing. I think what the eye is going to do is... Move the focus onto the next body part, and the next big body part, ladies and gents, are teeth and fingers. So eyes have got rodent-like teeth in that they're perpetually growing, which means if they don't, you know, continue to exercise them and run them down on wooden things, they'll just grow continuously forever. And I think Kim K and now, you know, Chicago West, that gang,
Chicago,
would look, oh no, so
oh
funny.
Dear,
I think that gang would look great with very long teeth. They're forward facing as well, so that you can really get in onto the bark. So, you know, they could start eating insects, or it could be a way to like bite Kanye on the tushy, who knows. So they've got these enormous long teeth, which I think the Kardashians are going to want to cash in on. But also, going back to that very long middle finger that they have, one of the great things about their middle finger, well, actually it's kind of tragic, is that in the local communities, they are killed quite often if they're ever seen, because local folklore says that if you see an eye, then it will, you know, it will bring badness and, you know, bad luck to you. But what's especially concerning is if an eye points at you with its very long middle finger, certain death will follow.
Oh my goodness, I'm scared already.
Yeah, maybe the Kim K and Co clan, which is what I'm now going to call them.
I wouldn't. Otherwise, we've got the KKK or the Ku Klux Klan, a fairly similar K-related clan.
Yeah,
so
we'll
stick with the Kardashians.
The branding has been taken already.
Oh God. Apologies for that.
Anyway,
as in logo branding. Sorry.
They also like throwing shade, don't they? So
yeah,
you
yeah.
know.
So that was where I was initially going with that.
You know, they could face off Taylor Swift with an eye.
Exactly.
And you know,
any,
who would want to destroy or face an eye, to be honest?
Any enemies can just get the finger.
Are they called the eye because they have big eyes, or are they called it for another name?
Well, that's a good question, actually. There's lots of uncertainty about why they're called eyes, but what I really like is that they think it might have come from what was initially called hehe, which is Malagasy for I don't know. I don't know. So, you know, people are like, what's that creature? And then they go, oh, I don't know. And that's what they're called now.
Because I thought you were going to be like, they have super big eyes and that's going to be the next fashion trend.
Well, you know, could be.
But anyway, I'm liking the amplification of body parts, which is a big thing in the Kardashian clan, is also a big thing, really, within the evolution of the eyes. So I can think they might, you know, I'm sure that they can be fairly feisty and enjoy throwing shade and pointing at people, so this might be a match made in heaven. But Poppy, what about you and your shark? How are they going to compete?
Well, I think they're just going to feel a real connection with the Greenland shark. So firstly, it's cold-blooded.
way to flatter them into accepting you, Poppy.
Essentially, this Greenland shark has a couple of extra tricks up its sleeves. So, first of all, it is a delicacy, but it's a delicacy because of how, so in Greenland, obviously to eat, but it's delicacy because of how difficult it is to get there. And again, especially talking about shade that the Kardashians are famous for, you don't want to eat the Greenland shark without your preparation. Its meat is toxic. It essentially, before it kills you, you're just really drunk. Which again, I feel, especially considering the Kim breaks the internet picture, she loves her champagne. So if she has this in small doses, she'll get a nice alcoholic high.
Do you think she could balance a bit of Greenland shark on her bum like she did a champagne bottle?
I imagine she could. They start off quite small before they do their really long growing over the years.
I might need to remind you that this is for an environmental campaign to improve their publicity with hippies.
Okay.
So just maybe think about that in your next few sentences.
Oh, definitely. It's just they're very well-rounded in terms of where they can go, these Greenland sharks. So they're the only true subarctic sharks, so they can go to -1 degree. Obviously, with the ice caps melting, it's very important to show your solidarity for these cold creatures. And also, obviously, if you can say, hey, don't eat me, I'm really toxic, because the only way to have them safely is if you have to boil it over several changes of water, and then you have to ferment it over several months. And then when you hang it up to dry for several weeks, then it won't kill you when you eat it. So the effort involved, I feel, is similar for the Kardashians in terms of the amount of effort they put into their daily appearance. So in order to survive in the world of celebrity, you've got to put a lot of effort in. In order to survive as a Greenland shark, you just don't get eaten. And they're top of the food chain. So I'm sure Kim K loves to think she is. And I think other than the fact that they smell of urine, apparently, I don't think there's much else that would convince them.
I think you might have drawn the line there. I'm not quite sure that they'll want their entire mansions to smell of urine, although at the moment they are expecting a lot of babies, so it might not really be that differential.
I would bet their mansions never smell of urine, no matter how many babies are in them.
Probably not. But I like. Okay, so I didn't know that you confer. Well, I mean, it makes sense when you drink a lot of alcohol that makes you drunk, and alcohol is a poison, so I imagine it's a similar effect. However, I'm not really sure that for an environmentalist campaign of this nature, we should be encouraging the Kardashians to eat your championed animal. Although I do appreciate the similarities you have drawn between them. And whilst I felt that the argument from the San Francisco garter snake relying on the Americanism and the beauty is well thought out, I'm actually going to go with the eye because I think they are going to be loved by the Kardashian family.
Yeah, and if you didn't, I would have pointed my middle finger at you. So.
Exactly, and I don't want to be dead. So, how have you all won one each? Is that how that's happened?
Yeah.
Should we go for our tiebreaker question? Ooh. Our final tiebreaker question. A rogue hot air balloon trip gone wrong has landed you on a stranded desert island like Robinson Crusoe. How will you survive in this new environment until help arrives?
I will swim away because I'm a shark.
Okay, that solved that problem. Sarah?
It's one of these things where you're like, how do you beat a shark? I do think there is a problem that maybe I'm assuming incorrectly, but I feel like my hot air balloon probably had more than just a snake on it. There were,
yeah, we're not worried about anybody else. It's
oh,
just
we're
you.
Not worried about anybody else.
No, just you surviving from the hot air balloon accident.
Are there other animals for us to eat that were also in the balloon?
Well, I don't know. There's presumably a whole desert island worth to explore, so maybe.
Well, garter snakes are incredible in that they can eat lots and lots and lots of different things. So they do need to eat, and they eat animals, but they eat everything from fish, frogs, mice, slugs, newts, pretty much anything that's alive.
They're not picky eaters, then.
So I think, yeah, they tend to have sort of favourite foods, but they can eat a lot of different things. And they have the ability to eat, in some cases, quite poisonous things. So a lot of garter snakes, although we're not sure how much this is true, the specific San Francisco garter snake have co-evolved with newts to be able to eat incredibly poisonous newts, which then become more poisonous so they don't get eaten. And I feel like those sorts of abilities are pretty clutch when you're on a small island to eat anything, including poisonous and kind of nasty things.
I think that's pretty impressive. So gluttony would be the solution.
Yeah, and I also think the garter snake would have no need to get back to civilization. It would probably be pretty happy just hanging out on the island for the rest of its life with nothing trying to disturb it or eat it. I think that's a great plan.
Cool. And lastly, Hannah, the eye, how is that going to deal with being stranded on an unknown desert island in a new area?
Well, if the island was rainforest, it'd probably do okay. But I think I might go for my wild card.
Yes. Yeah.
I think just plodding along is not really good enough an answer. So I've got ladybirds. I think I might pull a shark and fly away, you know.
So we've got two escapologists and one eat everything in sight.
I feel like I've cheated, so the Greenland shark I think would do quite well. So say it was a landlocked lake.
Okay, you're stuck in a landlocked lake.
We're doing the reverse. I feel like that's slightly fairer.
Okay, you're stuck in a lake and the ladybird's had its wings clipped.
Oh, that's really horrible.
I can't make it fair.
I mean, ladybirds also probably couldn't fly across the ocean.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
You don't know.
With a big gust of wind.
The little ladybird that could. So, again, much like the garter snake, the Greenland shark eats everything. It's a known scavenger, but again, it's got to have some tricks up its sleeves because we're not 100% sure how it hunts because it's a really slow swimmer. Where it's in so cold water, it doesn't need to rush anywhere.
I'm really just imagining a kind of an OAP shark.
Considering they can get to 400 or 500 years old, that's literally it. Can't see, using its cane. And it's even been found to have a whole reindeer in their stomach.
Whoa.
So that they're quite good. We don't know how they're getting their whole reindeer, but they get them. It's believed that they... ambush sleeping seals. So it's sneaky. It's not fussy about what it eats, whether that's polar bears, moose, horses, whole reindeer, as well as smaller sharks and fish, etc. And maybe, with it being so long-lived, it will just wait for the world to change around it. It will wait it out and just wait for the lake to have an oxbow lake and a river go through, and it will end up back where it wants in the Arctic.
Okay, island hopping. Hannah's looking horrified that I've made the ladybird have clipped wings. But do you think there's anything else you could do to survive?
How many aphids are on this island?
You could find out.
I don't know.
Okay, well, that's the end of that scenario. And I think I'm actually going to go with Poppy's shark being the overall winner for sheer, respecting your elders factors. So congratulations, Poppy.
Woohoo!
Woo! And that is the end of Creature Wars. Let's say bye, everyone.
Bye.